not sure if you know who I am, but I'm about to rule the world.
Wow, yay.
But there's one problem. There's a human, has a mustache, just like you.
Do you think I know every human being with a mustache wearing an identical outfit with a hat with the letter of his first name on it? Because I don't.
Bowser is coming. Together, we are going to stop that monster.
How? Look at us. We're adorable.
Da 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy!
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen!
It's showtime.
It's a movie that probably would have gone a lot higher. The movie draft a few weeks ago. But for some reason, critics are turning on this one. I don't know what the deal is. Perfectly innocent, harmless movies. We just have to dogpile on them and decide we hate them. I don't understand what's going on. It's the Super Mario Brothers, the movie. Super Mario Brothers, the movie. The animated
version.
Are we
qualified to review this, not being Italian?
I'm actually 1/16th Italian. According to the ID that I keep in my... in my wallet in case I want chicken parm, you know?
Yeah. That's how you judge a good restaurant, just so you know, if they can make a good chicken parm. Super hard.
We were supposed to go to a Billy Joel concert on Saturday. And it got canceled because Stevie Nicks was sick or band has COVID or something. So our like weekend kind of got thrown into flux and we ended up having like, you do a date night on Friday night instead of Saturday. But it was, again, it's kind of last minute. Lindsay was trying to get a bunch of work done. We got to the place where we were planning on going for dinner, and it was super swamped. Every place around there is super swamped. So we're in South Lake Town Square. We ended up at a place that I'd never been before. I was like, yeah, it's fine. We'll give this a shot. And looked at the menu. And it was one of those places that kind of had like, didn't really have a discernible.
Sure.
Wasn't really sure what's going on here, you know?
It's like, you're at the Cheesecake Factory?
No, I would have figured it out of the Cheesecake Factory. It's just that True Fire grill that's over there at South Lake.
Oh yeah, kind of new American. That's just fire.
It was a weird vibe. Like a lot of live, laugh, love on the walls. Didn't really expect that.
There you go.
Given the rest of it, just no did not have a discernible identity, and had pizza earlier that week or something. So I was like, I don't really want that. I looked. I was like, yeah. I'm going to go to the chicken parm. And
was it good?
No, it was not. It was the first time I've ever had chicken parm where I was that was like a 5. Like, you feel like the baseline is a 7. And the top is like in 7
Simmons
and a half.
Simmons is
you know?
But rolling.
Simmons is he was
three
right
shirts
about
right now.
Yeah. He's right about something.
Chicken parm is very high on the hard to mess up.
I know. Exactly. I know. Yeah. That's what I felt like.
It's at least a 5 bet. On
Always.
The worst day.
Yeah.
It's a 5. Yes.
Chicken parm and a burger. It's really hard to screw that up. And this was pretty close to screwed up chicken parm. Wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Don't recommend.
Well, now that's where we're going for hardcore Italian conversation.
How excited was your son, Brian, for this movie? He's right about the age. He's what, 10 right now?
He's about to be 10, yeah.
Good grief. Prime for this.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm. My nephew is 10. He could not stop talking about it, as well as my nieces. They're slightly younger, but very much looking forward to this. So you guys went and saw it this weekend, Brian. Mm. Did it live up to his expectations? That's what really matters.
I kind of think he was disappointed by it. It's weird. He was like, we did a big thing. Like we went on, everybody was off.
He sees a lot of movies, though.
It's true.
He does. True. I mean, for
it's true.
A lot.
Yeah,
I would think.
Yeah. But we had good Friday off. So Thursday night, he wanted to go with his friends. He's been talking about this for months. And so we got a bunch of his buddies together and parents and whatnot, went to see the movie. And he was into it. It wasn't like he thought this is bad or this is home. I think that's the only movie he's ever seen in theater that he was like, no, not a fan.
Yeah,
and
he waved his hands like he, in fact,
he
did
not
care.
He did not care. He liked it, but he was a little less effusive than I expected him to be about it. He was more into Dungeons and Dragons than he was into this, which surprised me.
Wow,
well, you were stoked about that.
Yeah, I was like, all right, we won.
You had a gun to his head the whole time in Dungeons and Dragons.
Roll the dice, kid. Roll the dice.
Forced to love it. That's it's interesting because I want to talk a little bit about how this movie did, obviously, a little bit of business stuff like we do here on the show before we get into specifics. But something we've talked about a lot when it comes to video game movies and why it's so hard to do them correctly and why they're so divisive a lot of times is because you're taking something that you're actively participating in the story and you're changing it to something where you're passively participating in the story or not participating at all. You're just observing the story this time. So I think Cooper, your son, Brian, and you know, a lot of people, maybe critics, everybody knows Mario. Everybody has played Mario. Everybody probably grew up with it in some way. If you didn't personally grow up on it, you definitely, your kids did.
Sure.
And so everybody has kind of an idea of what they wanted this to be, right? And has their own experience with the games, things that they wish this featured, the tone that they wish this would hit. Honestly, I thought this was perfectly fine, harmless, and in fact, good in a lot of areas, above average. And so, you know, I can't see why there is negativity coming out about it. But at the same time, I can see why people have feelings about this because it's their entire childhood, a lot of kids.
Yeah, this is this has been kind of an odd year for mass market movies to me. That I would guess that in a normal year, at least when we're talking the mainstream big budget kind of movies, my Rotten Tomato scores tend to fall in line, I would guess, 85% of the time with what the consensus is, because I'm very basic and I'm very easy to please. But yeah, this is usually kind of how I tend to fall. And this year, this is at least the third big mainstream kind of movie that has a negative overall vibe on a score on Rotten Tomatoes, and that I'll be positive on, or at least nominally positive with this one. So it's been strange. This feels like maybe at least the third time this year where I've kind of walked in seeing like, man, critics overall weren't too enthused about this. And then kind of walked out feeling like that was like at worst, like harmless. My wife was a little disappointed in this. She's the one in the family that like loved video games growing up, plays video games. Her and Cooper still play Mario and whatnot on the Switch. I don't. I pretty much only play Mario Kart. I don't really care about video games. She was a little disappointed in that there weren't. She told me afterwards, she was like, I just was kind of expecting it to be something like jokes wise, maybe not necessarily overall quality, but like jokes wise, be something closer to Toy Story. And I was like, well, it's the people that made Minions. So I feel like that's not necessarily what you should have been expecting.
This was clearly for kids.
Yeah.
I got that vibe as well.
So yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's not like an incredibly impressive movie. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe people who really, really, really love Mario were hoping that this was going to be Pixar quality level of a movie. And I just don't think that was ever in the cards for me. This was fine, somewhere between fine and actually, hey, that was pretty fun. And that's really all I'm looking for necessarily in a 90 minute animated kids movie. So
you're saying the Minions people don't know comedy.
I'm saying the Minions people, Illumination knows how to make a billion, you know, and they're, most of the time, their billion-dollar movies are pretty harmless. If you're not Kent, who really hates the Minions,
I would argue Minions is very harmful.
Harmful to society, yeah. But yeah, overall, it's like they know what they're doing. They're not going to. I don't know. I did not. I guess I just didn't expect that this was going to be an instant like Oscar contender or something. But I also don't. I mean, genuinely, I don't have nearly as much nostalgia and attachment to this world as some people do. As a sort of nominal experiencer of the Nintendo, the Mario verse, this was about what I expected it to be, and what I expected it to be was just kind of a fun time at the theater, and I got that. But you know, I don't know. Maybe you guys are different, and maybe the listener is different on that.
Yeah, 100%. Richard What kind of history do you have with Mario? Did you play it growing up and all that? I know your son's too young to understand or be into this, but
yeah, he's a Kirby guy, and Mega Man.
Kirby's having a renaissance right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, I love me some Kirby. That's not a bad idea.
Kirby games that's high on Coop's birthday wish list is the Kirby game. So
yeah, I have played billions of hours of Mario in my life. Like, as someone who's not a video gamer, I kind of figured out the kind of games I liked when I was like three and just wrote it out. I never really evolved into the modern stuff. I have a little like, I don't know if it's legal, but there's a little thing I got for like $60 7 years ago that's like a Game Boy, but it has like all these games preloaded on it. Little color screen. I always have it on flights. It's in my nightstand. And I play Super Mario World 3 from the NES all the time on it. Like in the middle of the night when I can't sleep, I'll just like...
The best one?
It is. I just get the whistles and I, you know, go to whatever level I want to go to.
It's kind of cheating, but okay.
Well, it's just like, you know, I don't want to start from scratch every time, but how many times can you play World 1, you know?
If I'm versed, I never did Super Mario on Super Nintendo, and I played a bit of the N64 one, which I know is great, but I was always just at kids' houses and stuff. And then obviously every iteration of Mario Kart ever, save for the really new Switch stuff, though I am, the minute Coop is like remotely old enough, that will be in our house, because not for him, but for me, but I can't really justify it right now. Big Mario Kart guy. It's weird. I like don't know... Like, I know the games and I know stuff, but I don't really, never really got any of the super not canon or like Mario, Super Smash Brothers. And you know what I mean? Like, I know seven characters and I know them like I know members of my family, but I don't really know what they're like. I just know that,
so
like,
classic classic NES is kind of your vibe, and you still rock the Game Boy.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really know what Toad is supposed to be like as a person, but I know that he's small and fast, you know.
Well, Brian can tell us a lot about that. Brian, according to your Toad fan fiction, he is... No, I'm just kidding.
So, no, I don't know. But so I like simultaneously know and don't know, and I say to set all that up. So I had no expectations. We did the throwback on the old movie. That's about as deep as I've gone, but that doesn't really teach you anything. You know, voice cast is kind of fun. I thought it'd be... Once you start seeing the visuals, kind of, you know, bright and... You know, a happy little thing. Like, I figured this would be, this is a lovely 8-minute YouTube video. Oh my God, how much longer do I have to be in here? And it turns out that is exactly what it was for me. No, I mean, it wasn't bad, but like, yeah, I just didn't, you know. It's like, yeah, I get this. I would be into this if I was Cooper's age or maybe a little younger. I think he's probably not his fault. Like, I think it's targeting maybe 7-8-year-olds a little more than it's targeting 9-10-year-olds, which seems dumb, but that's a big jump,
sure.
Right? There's like tonal things that are very different at that. So he probably was like maybe a little bummed. Like, I like this, but it seems a little kiddie.
No, him. I think you could be onto something there for sure.
Yeah. I think it's always hilarious to hear a 10-year-old say or 9-year-old say, but they're not wrong. Yeah. There's nuances there. Mm-hmm. And, but I completely appreciated this for what it was. I totally understand that it made a ton of money. I mean, some of it was overwhelming, and that's me. I'm not an animation person. And so I'm not even like into the Spider-Verse. I found overwhelming at times just because I don't sense that well. But I did find the animation that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Brian. I don't think I liked it as much as you, but I am also equally as like, really, this is the one we've all chosen to hate. And part of that is, look, it's a huge property and it's, you know, people aren't going to hate on Home, right?
Right. Yeah.
We're just going to keep referencing that. They're just going to watch it and wave their hands like they just do not care. But it doesn't have the platform of this. So this naturally brings in love or hate, and I get it to an extent. But yeah, this seemed like a perfectly great way to get a bunch of 8-year-olds to have the afternoon of their life to me.
I think this serves a few purposes. One is money. Two is to reignite the love of the Mario franchise across the board for, you know, video games, merchandising, go back, play the old games, you know, sequelize this, make a TV show out of this, all that kind of stuff. I think there was right potential for them to do this at some point. We got the Super Mario World theme park, which is how they ended up doing this with Universal.
was the partnership that they had formed there. They were really happy with the theme park. And they're like, oh, it's Talk Animation now. And Universal's got Illumination. And so worked out that deal. You know, a Mario animated movie is something they've wanted to do for a long time, but mm-hmm. had hesitancy to do for obvious reasons, because it's a brand that is very lucrative, and you do it bad, you can mess that up.
And the brand wasn't, and Nintendo was not going to give the rights, because they were so burned that first time they held the rights for 30 years. Mm-hmm. They kind of killed any chance of doing it. I don't think those conversations got down very far roads.
Yeah.
Because you could totally see DreamWorks doing this 20 years ago.
For sure. For sure.
Nintendo had, played ball.
There was discussions around the time of the Sony hack. I think they were trying to do it there. But obviously there's a conflict of interest there with PlayStation and Nintendo. So they would have had to work something out there. This works better for both parties. They're promoting their own stuff from within. And the possibilities are endless when it comes to sequelizing this thing, franchising this thing out. I mean, you mentioned Kirby, Richard. I mean, that's kind of Mario adjacent. I don't think they really cross over much, maybe other than Super Smash Bros. But boom, Super Smash Brothers movie. We could do that. I'm surprised a little bit. I don't know how your kid felt about this, but I certainly felt like, why are they doing Mario Kart in this movie? Because I felt like they could have done a Mario Kart movie of its own thing and kind of built that up or teased that and maybe had a little. Now it seems like if they did a Mario Kart movie, it would just be that scene for the entire thing, which I'm not sure people would be super into. So that was a little confusing to me. Also, Donkey Kong being such a big part of this, which I thought the actual worlds, I mean, there's so many memorable worlds in Mario. Everybody has their favorites, right? It seemed like they were mainly taking inspiration from the original NES and SNES games for the worlds, which I love. That's my wheelhouse of Mario. I'm glad they weren't like doing much Nintendo Switch references, because I wouldn't have got any of that. So I think that stuff was kind of for the adults, just the era of Mario that they focused on. But I love the worlds. I mean, the Mushroom Kingdom was awesome. The Donkey Kong world, whatever it's called, was awesome. Rainbow Road was awesome. I thought Bowser's headquarters looked great. So I thought it was colorful and more visually appealing than the video games. Like, this looked like a movie to me. Mm-hmm. It didn't look like just a Mario cutscene.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's, like I said, Illumination, they know how to make money. This thing costs $100 million to make. That's pretty incredible in today's, in this economy, in today's market. I would have guessed higher. I mean, it helps. 90 minutes helps versus, 2 hours or 2.5 hours, God forbid. But yeah, I mean, it looks really, really impressive. It looks better than any Switch game for sure. You can tell where they did the Netflix thing. They spent their money on the talent, and then they spent the money on the visuals, and it looks awesome. It's a really impressive visual world, and kudos to them. I would say for understanding that this is a freaking video game movie, and that's the thing that's probably most important, is making it look really good. I think it's really impressive. The world building is really impressive. The story isn't, and obviously, I mean, it's a
well. Okay, let me back up the story people for a second, because let's all back up and take a look at Mario the story. Mm-hmm. It's about two plumber brothers from Brooklyn who get sucked into a tube and have to rescue a princess. Like that in and of itself is ridiculous, right? So try making that digestible and entertaining, which is what they're tried to do multiple times. I think it's just like the outset of the Mario story, the origin story, is just not interesting, plain and simple. And so making it a movie is just not interesting. You know, where they can go from here in terms of telling their own stories and taking it in new directions, when the movie is Mario, Luigi, let's go to Peach and kill Bowser. I mean, I think that's pretty don't know, by the books, not necessarily in a bad way, but like they didn't take any risks story-wise here, which I'm kind of relieved by. Like this wasn't Chippendale Rescue Rangers, right? Where you have this total diff, or even Detective Pikachu, let's go there, where you have this kind of different approach to the material. This was a, let's make the video game into a movie. And I kind of appreciated that about it. The side-scrolling sequence with Beastie Boys, Brian?
Yeah.
At the beginning? The No Sleep Till Brooklyn?
Yeah. A-plus, that, immediately, yeah.
When he was helping Luigi and all those little video game references, I love those moments in this, that it kind of cut away and it became a video game cutscene, moment for, I don't know, a few seconds. I love that. It made me want to see a Mario game in this style, that side scroll style with this animation style. Does that make sense? Like, make that into a game. Yeah. I would play the heck out of that. That seems like a lot of fun. Gosh, there were so many characters, references. I mean, all the different colored shells, right, from Mario Kart, and all the Goombas and different boxes. I mean, there's just like a smorgasbord of memorable things, and not to mention just the music. Something we had talked about last week on our VIP episode on the old Mario movie, which you can listen to now, the one from the 90s. We mentioned how they just didn't lean into the Mario music, which is so great. This one for sure did.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All different kinds of worlds have their own themes, and Bowser playing him on the piano. And I mean, that was great.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, there's a lot of kids that were introduced to Tenacious D over the last weekend with Jack Black and the Peaches song and stuff. So that's going to lead to some fun, interesting conversations for the parents of some like 11-year-olds soon, I'm sure. Like, what are you listening
school,
to on this
podcast? School of Rock.
Yeah. For sure. My kid is such a, my wife is like the most rule follower kind of person, and Coop definitely takes after her. And so like, I don't have any parental controls or filters or blocks or whatever on pretty much any of the streaming and music services and stuff that we have, because it's like, he's just not going to ever break the rules. That's what's going to happen though, is like, he's going to be like, well, I was trying to listen to Jack Black because of the Super Mario Brothers movie. And then he's going to have heard a lot of stuff, you know, something like that is definitely going to happen at some point for my kid and probably for some others. But yeah, the music was good. And I liked the using of the Mario music or you know, just off of that for the various worlds and mixing in pop culturally relevant, or at least relevant to me, music was good too. I thought that was a pretty solid bit. I thought the open to a lot of the Easter eggs, I'm sure I didn't pick up on because I'm not Mr. Mario, but I thought the commercial at the beginning was really funny, using the old Mario animated series theme song for that was a funny bit.
That seemed to be a reference from the original Mario Brothers movie, right? They do that bit with the commercial.
Yeah,
the
original. This was but the song, but it looked like that animated series that was out
right
in like the early 90s, which I thought was funny too. So yeah, there was a whole lot of stuff like that that was built in that it
had some Warren Miller-y aspects.
Yeah,
to it.
Absolutely,
not fully,
absolutely. Yeah,
it certainly was. You know, homage in some ways to that.
Yeah, I think so too. What was confusing to me, are they adults? Are they teenagers? What was going on? I mean, they were like 13-year-olds with full mustache. Like them going to their family dinner and then going to their room to play video games seemed very odd. Like, these aren't kid Marios. These are full, they have a plumbing business, for God's sake, you know? And their dad didn't have gray hair, so that was confusing. I was like, very odd with it. I'm confused on the timeline that we're working on here.
So it's Italian genes,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
So all that all
I guess. Yeah. So it was very funny. So they want him to be like youthful, but still old. It's very weird. It's a very weird thing they're trying to, you know, a line they're trying to walk there. It was funny. But I thought the family was really entertaining. I thought Luigi was really entertaining. Charlie Day as Luigi, I thought was good voice casting. Let's discuss that elephant in the room, the voice cast. I thought that was fine.
I don't.
It's a voice cast for the animated movie. Why does anyone have to get upset or have any kind of real anger towards this? It's funny.
Yeah, I did not understand the controversy on that. I think people really want to find reasons to crap on Chris Pratt and to hate Chris Pratt. This was this week's excuse to do that, I feel like. So I don't know. Like I constantly would be like, you guys know this is like a Japanese video game. This is not like an authentic Italian piece of culture and history, right? Like it's fine. We're gonna be okay.
Yeah, he's not playing Leonardo da Vinci, he's playing
Exactly. It's like I think we're gonna be okay. I don't know. That's just me. I'm built different, so didn't really bother.
You got that dog in you. That's
right. Charlie Day bothered me more than anything because his voice annoys me. But that he was fine this. This was the like the limit of what I can handle with Charlie Day and his voice.
His voice is getting deeper as he's getting older, so it's way better now than it was like 10, 15 years ago.
Jackknife.
It was more like shrieky back then. Now it's a little. Yeah, a little more raspy. So
I'm not a huge fan, but that's okay. You can't all be fans of everything.
I really like the bit of Bowser being just super sensitive.
Yeah,
I thought that was good. Great writing.
I mean, Jack Black was totally bought in on this because he's the best. Like doing the interviews in a Bowser costume. I don't know if you guys have seen this. He did a lot of the. He did the talk show appearances and the junkets and stuff, just wearing a Bowser costume. He seems like most of these actors took this for the paycheck, and God bless them because it was a lot of money and they deserve it, so it's all good. And Jack Black was like, "No, I'm going to fully commit to this," which I love. I thought was a funny. He was the best part of the movie, I thought, besides like the visuals and stuff.
What was your favorite sequence of the movie? Mine was, I probably already mentioned it, the Streets of Brooklyn video game sequel. I like the pipes as well, when Mario discovers the pipe world with, I guess it's Toad, the beginning, and they're kind of having the same kind of side-scroll experience. And then a moment at the end that I'll save for spoilers that I really enjoyed too. But what was your favorite sequence in the movie, Brian?
You are right that I think that they probably would have been wise to save some of these big pulls for the second and third movies. But I enjoyed the Rainbow Road and Donkey Kong sequences. I thought those were both really fun and a little more lively than some of the rest of the movie. And, so I'm glad they were there, but I do think there's something to be said for, Mario Kart comes into play in the third movie or something like that, or Donkey Kong does. Same thing.
It just seems like such an easy moneymaker just to have a Mario Kart, the movie. Yeah. That seemed like it would have been so easy. This movie was interesting enough without that, I think, just because the whole entire world's just seeing that for the first time, introduce the characters, all that. Even though that was a really fun sequence, I think, it maybe could have been helped. They did tease some stuff. Princess Peach says there's a ton of other galaxies out there, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's teasing Mario Galaxy, and he seems very intrigued by that idea. And then there's a spoilery tease at the end, a post-credits type tease for a character that they could introduce. But seemed to want to cram a lot of stuff into this, which was... which is fine. But hey, this was 90 minutes, fellas. There's just something about that 30 minute acts that just works. It goes back to what we were talking about in the Avatar episode about 24 frames a second. There's just something about that in our mind and in our subconscious works. And we like it and we're used to it. And it brings us joy and comfort. So I think leaning into that as much as possible is fine and should be something that we embrace. And this certainly did and loved it.
Yeah.
Knew what it was. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something to be appreciated about that Even when the movie is, kind of slight and lesser and doesn't really do much from a storytelling perspective or whatever else, I appreciate so much that this was 90 minutes and that they knew that that's what this needed to be. Like, again, Illumination knows who their audience is, and who they're aiming at, and they have succeeded at that on that. And to knock this out in 90 minutes, gosh, I love it. It's nice. Nice to get a few of these movies a year. Just a few, seems like.
I thought it had some pretty funny jokes for, it looked like it was written by one person, which surprised me. This seemed like it would have been something to have seven passes at or whatever. Sure. But you're right, Brian. When they invested money in the visuals and the voice talents, like, let's just get a script and make sure it's good.
Yeah.
But the joke that I liked was when Mario was like, Luigi, destiny is calling. And he's like, that girl from high school? I just thought that was such an easy, funny joke. Yeah. But yeah, there was some good stuff in there. It wasn't like cringe humor or anything like that. I thought there was some funny bits. And overall, I was pretty entertained. Like, I went in expecting dog crap.
Right.
Even people in our Discord was like, oh my God, what am I watching? Mm-hmm. I never got that with this at all. I thought it was entertaining and enjoyable for the most part. But, you know, not every movie can be Toy Story or, break the mold for animation. A lot of movies are going to just fall right into that mold. Yeah. And that's fine.
It would have been awesome if you could have gotten like B+ or A- jokes, but you didn't. You mostly got B jokes, and that's fine. Like, it wasn't cringy. It wasn't super cheesy. I think that the Easter eggs
got way too political though.
yeah. All the Reagan stuff, I didn't really feel like was fair, to be honest. But that's
timely.
The Nancy stuff was.
Yeah, Coop had a lot of questions about. That old Nance.
What's a goat?
The Easter eggs I felt like were pretty well incorporated into the movie. I mean, again, I'm sure I missed some of them because I'm not a Super Mario brother. But overall, I think it was. I mean, gosh, we see how many scripts a year, even in better movies. How many scripts do we see in a year that are so much worse than this? So. I was like, it's fine on this front. Yes, I get, like, the first review I saw was kind of trashing on the story elements, and I'm like, you're right, but you're totally right. Like, it's a freaking video game movie. It's a movie where that revolves around,
and it's not The Last of Us, where like that story is an interesting story. It's not an interesting story.
It's too. Maybe teenage plumbers trying to get a princess out of a castle and save her from a giant turtle. I don't really know what, you know. I wasn't necessarily looking for Sorkin here. So, but yeah, it hit those marks, I think, just fine.
Gosh, it's so, it is just funny, the visceral disdain for something so harmless, just perfectly fine. I mean, just... We see hundreds of movies, and this was not even close to like one of the worst movies I've seen in even the past year. So, we talked about the financials a little bit. Obviously, quite successful weekend it had over Easter.
Did okay.
Let's take a look back now at the top 10 highest grossing video game movies. From 1995 to 2023, number 10, this is domestic, by the way.
95 to 23, you said? Okay.
Yes. Yep. This is domestic.
Okay.
Number 10, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, the most Persian actor
there. For some reason, I translated in my brain that's you said video game movies. Okay.
Yes.
For whatever reason, I was thinking animated movies, and I was like, I don't think that's an animated movie. But
video game movies.
Sorry. All right, yes. My bad. Okay.
Video game adaptations.
I'm on board now. Yeah.
Number 9, Angry Birds movie, made $113 million, adjusted for inflation, these numbers are. Then Pokemon Detective Pikachu made $140 million. Sonic the Hedgehog, 146, Mortal Kombat, the 95 Mortal Kombat, 148. Pokemon, the first movie from 1999, 150 million. Uncharted from last year, 170. Sonic 2 from last year, 190. Lara Croft Tomb Raider from 2001, $212 million domestically. And number one, Super Mario Brothers Movie, $224 million. Worldwide, it's already number five on the list.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And any guesses on what number one is in the worldwide list for video games?
Laser Shoot Larry, the movie?
Brian?
It's probably some random thing that I don't remember as a video game. I'll go with the first Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I was going to say. Would be my guess
too. So Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
It's actually Warcraft from 2016.
Oh my. Dang it. God. I was about to say that jokingly and then I was like it might be that.
Warcraft in the US made 47 million. But internationally, made $400 million. Look. So
listen,
it made
listen,
it.
Listen. Okay, I know that we're not great these days, America, just as a whole. I know.
We didn't do that.
We make a lot of mistakes. We're easy to laugh at. We got that one right. You all missed, world. I don't know what China or Belgium or Belarus or wherever that was big. You screwed up. Look, we won that one.
That bought us 100 drones.
Yeah. We won that round. Yeah.
It looks like this movie's well on pace to be number one. Internationally, it's already made $400 million.
Yeah. Is that good? I think that's usually pretty good.
I think when it's all said and done, it'll be number one. But number two right now is actually Detective Pikachu. Well, it made over $400 million, and I saw that they announced a sequel to that. I was like, why would they make a sequel to that? But I guess in the big picture, it made a lot worldwide. Yeah. It only made 140 in the U.S., but it made 300 in overseas.
I don't know what my grade was for Detective Pikachu, but I think that this movie makes me want to retroactively lower the grade for Detective Pikachu just a tiny bit, just a little bit.
You gave it an A triple plus.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's an A now.
That was one of my all-time misses in the movie draft. I thought that was going to make $1 billion.
It felt like it was going to be huger than it was.
It's the biggest property in the world, maybe. It's incredible. So, that's one of the big, big mistakes, big misfires. Okay, let's round this out with a little spoiler talk because I want to talk about the end. I thought saving the star music when Mario gets the star and just Rex house, saving that for the end was awesome. That was my favorite moment of the movie.
Yeah, that was a good bit.
Overall.
That was a good bit. Oh, that was fun.
And I like the caps too, Richard, with the from Mario 3 with the raccoon cap flying, all that. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, very spoilery, when it comes to post credits, they tease Yoshi.
Yoshi rules. Yoshi. I'm pumped for Yoshi. Yeah, that'll be a fun time. I like that.
So
Gilbert Gottfried's final role too. So,
all right, I'm gonna hit a grade for this. I'm gonna go. I'm somewhere between a B and a B plus. So I'm gonna go like B minus plus. I'm like a 86 on it.
Okay,
yeah, Brian.
Gilbert Gottfried got me. That was a good joke. straight B. This is straight B for me.
I'll go B minus. Yeah. It deserves kind of that above the C grade just for being 90 minutes and being fine. So, yeah.
Plus the Beastie Boys.
It'd probably be like a C or C plus for me if it was 2 hours, and it wasn't.
Yeah. It's a B minus, but Beastie Boys. So, B. It's got to be.
That's fair. Yeah. Good. That's a heck of a rule.
There we go. The Super Mario Bros. Movie.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Let's hit a weekly recommend before we get out of here, guys.
Weekly recommend.
What you got, Brian?
I'm going to recommend a documentary that just dropped on HBO this weekend. It is called, make sure I have the title correct. It is Jason Isbell, Running With Our Eyes Closed. It is a, Jason Isbell is, if you're new to the show, I've talked about him ad nauseum, probably, annoyingly, over the years. He's maybe my favorite musician, certainly up there, if not number one. He's got a new album coming out in a couple of weeks, and HBO put out this doc on some of his life and then his like creative process. It's a lot of the it's a lot of work stuff in this. Have you seen this yet? I don't know if you've seen this one, Kent.
No, I listened to him on that pod talking about it, but I haven't watched it yet.
I've got out of time.
Okay. Yeah. It's a lot of studio stuff, like with them coming up with and recording the songs, but it plays out over several years. Like some of the footage that they have in the studio is from like, I think as far back as 2017, and then it runs through the first round-ish of the pandemic. And studio work and uses him like his methods and like what he comes into the studio with, and then his wife is in the band, and so then it crosses into like their home life and how these two interact and what they bring to the studio. And you know, there's a long stretch where they're just like in a fight and they're trying to be like professionals about it while they're in the studio, and then he's like, one of the bandmates at the end of the day is like, all right, we'll go home and sing that, you know, try and think that one through, come back tomorrow. And he just says, I think I'm sleeping here tonight, man. Like this is where I'm going to be, but we'll try to figure it out. But it has a lot of footage too, from his like early lives when he very famously, if you don't know anything about Jason, but he very famously was a very, very bad alcoholic and got clean in like 2013, and has made his best music since then. And so there's some stuff like about his sobriety and trying to stay sober and how the pandemic messed with him on that and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's really beautiful. It's really well put together. The Sam Jones is the guy who directed it. He's he has a podcast that's a lot of actors and musicians and stuff like that like to go on, and he gets a lot
great out of photographer.
Him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, really, really dug it. It's very well done. I'm excited for the new album, but it also is a nice like tight 90 minutes, I would say, something like that. So that's helpful as well. But Jason Isbell, Running With Our Eyes Closed on HBO, HBO Max, etc.
The Wilco doc he did is one of the best.
Yeah, docs, yeah. He knows what he's doing. Trying to break your heart. That's a great one. On the music docs, especially, I think he really gets. He has that quality. I don't listen to that podcast all that often. I kind of forget about it for a while, and then I'll, you know, every 6 months I'll listen to a whole bunch, you know, right in a row, because I kind of remember, oh yeah, this is really good. He has the thing that's I thought Conan was really good at this for a long time. I don't know if it's his new pod is a little bit of a different format. Sometimes Marin gets this way too, where there's just something about I think it's something about his presence and the questions that he asks that gets these people to give really good answers and to like get into stories that I'm not sure they would get into normally. You know, I don't think they come into the podcast studio expecting to talk about some of the things that they end up talking about. And I think that's a really impressive thing. And so I think that comes through a little bit in the way in his filmmaking. He has a pretty good eye for, this will convey the emotions of what's going on in this room. Just in the way that we're going to shoot it. And then the way that we're going to edit it afterwards, obviously, editing is a huge part of the documentary, especially, but, yeah, I'm really impressed with this one and the Wilco doc too. And he's pretty good at this.
All right, what you got,
Richard?
Yeah, I've got a book I read. I sent you guys. I thought you'd both dig it. It's from a couple years ago by Tom Schoen, The Nolan Variations. And it's a kind of critical understanding of Christopher Nolan films. And it's kind of, what's interesting about it is someone who's not super open, Christopher Nolan collaborated on this enough. It's almost co-written by him. Like, there's so many interviews with him in this that, like, it's certainly, you know, authoritative of, like, his intention with his work, and the stories behind it are really interesting. It goes pretty much, it also does a great job of, like, you know, we know the Escher influences and know a lot of stuff like that, but, like, it really has, like,
MacGruber
sets up every chapter that's about a, yeah, sorry, that, that, the every chapter that sets up the every movie, there's like a really interesting kind of, like, you know, for Dark Knight Rises, a huge thing on Tale of Two Cities and how that sets up Dark Knight Rises and stuff like that. So it does a really smart job of, like, getting the influence specific to each movie. Makes you appreciate kind of the thought that goes into them. It's also really interesting the, like, working relationship he's had across these films with not only his wife but his brother. And all that. So I thought, you know, it's the best probably movie book I've read in a while. And I've tried to read more and more of those. And one of the best books I read this year, I would say. I really, really enjoyed it. I can't wait to revisit it at some point. But yeah, The Nolan Variations by Tom Schoen. It's awesome.
Sweet. I just started the Mad Max book that you recommended a couple weeks ago. Really digging that. But this one's on the list as well, for sure.
Awesome. I'm going to recommend a book as well that I've been reading. It's Cinema Speculation. Finally started it.
Nice.
And it's greatness.
Yeah.
His
last chapter, that's really cool.
I'm not there yet, but his, just like the amount of movies he just references or lists off, it's I'm just writing them all down. It's like, God, need to see that one. Need to see that. It's just crazy. It's just all his subconscious is just movie references. It's crazy in the best way.
The experience that he had, you know, seeing them with Mom's Boyfriends and like the black exploitation theaters and things like that.
Yeah, that's
great. That opening chapter, I think it's the first chapter, is super, you know, pretty crazy happenstance of life experience that kind of gives us.
It makes a lot of sense how he turned out the way he did. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. He's like a funny nature versus, you think of his kind of brain and his sensibilities as being sort of inevitable. You know, it's like there's something to his brain that is built for this, but then you kind of realize it's a lot more nurture than you realize, than just nature.
What he was saying in there about that, when his parents would take him, because they would save on a babysitter if they could just take him to whatever movie it was that they were going to go see. And he realized really quickly, it's like, just be cool. Just keep your mouth shut. Don't be annoying. Don't ask a ton of questions, and you can go to all these cool movies. Mm-hmm. So he just basically just chilled, and his parents were like, oh, this is great. He's just chilling, not asking us a ton of questions. And, you know, he knew what to ask after the movie. You know, that was question time, was after we had seen it, and we can all kind of discuss it on the way home. But he also knew stuff that he shouldn't talk about that he had seen. It's like, hey, don't tell anyone we let you see this. So he had an understanding with his parents at a really early age that was just fascinating. Like, he could have screwed it all up. They take him to one, I don't know, Jim Brown movie, and he goes and blabs all over town. He never gets to see another one, right? Mm-hmm. So he played it really cool from a young age, and was able to see a lot of great movies. But yeah, great book. If you just want to hear Tarantino talk about movies, which who doesn't? Cinema Speculation, the book. All right, there you go. There's Week Recommends and the Super Mario Brothers movie. Hope you enjoyed it. Please subscribe. Become a VIP if you want more from us. We're talking about Mud in honor of 10 years in the VIP this week. So make sure you subscribe if you want more throwback episodes. It's madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. We love you. We'll see you next time at the cinema. Goodbye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs.
And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. The salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.